Get ready. Here comes episode number 103.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Road Trekking, the RV Lifestyle Podcast. No matter what kind of an RV you have, a motorhome, a towable trailer, a tent, even if you're just dreaming maybe about getting an RV someday, this show is for you because here we talk about being out there, enjoying God's amazing creation, meeting interesting people, boondocking, discovering great places, and using the right gear and technology to enhance our RV lifestyle. So we welcome you and are honored that you chose to put us in your ears this week. Well, we got lots to talk about in this week. We're going to talk right off the top here pretty quick about crossing the border in your RV, particularly the Canadian border. And we'll give you some resources. If you've never done that before, you might be a little intimidated by the idea of going into a different country. We're going to try and de-intimidate you or unintimidate you, whatever the correct form is. Help you so you understand what involves going to and coming back from Canada, what you need to know, what you can and can't bring into each country, and what to expect when you travel between the two. Plus, we have some great tips. Jennifer has some tips on what to do about your sticks and bricks house when you're off traveling in your RV, how to make sure things are safe and secure back home when you're out there. And we've got information on the best way to level or stabilize your RV. We've got information on technology and some tools to help you there, plus RV news of the week and lots of audience questions and comments, and we're delighted to have you with us. And I'm delighted right now to bring on my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, dear.
And I'm delighted to be here as well.
And here this time happens to be our Sticks and Bricks home. We are back from yet another trip. I think we've been gone a lot this year. Huh?
We have. I think the worst thing is trying to clean the place up after you go away. I can't believe all the dust and dirt.
Well, nobody's been in it for quite a while.
Yeah, and, but why is it always dusty and dirty? And then the spider webs take over. But I could just leave them and say early Halloween decorations.
I like that. That's a very good idea. That'd be fun. Halloween decorations. That's very creative of you.
I did. So.
I ran into spider webs and I walked into our studio here and there was a big one crawling across the floor. I had to take him out. I don't know.
Well, we live in the woods.
We do. We do.
We have mice. We have insects.
Anyway, we arrived as we record this. It's the 30th of August, and tomorrow's the release day of this episode is the 31st. We leave Sunday for yet another trip, this one into far northern Ontario, where we'll join a group of road trekkers at Tobermory, which is an incredible place on Lake Huron. I can't wait for that.
I'm looking forward to it, and I'm sure Bo is as well.
Yes, Bo is going with us on that trip, and we'll do a lot of reporting on that. We'll have some live Facebook feeds. I think even Sunday night, we've got a really neat campground that one of the guys up there has saw that we were coming up there, and he invited many of us up, and some of us are stopping Sunday night. It's Carson's Camp, it's called.
It looks really nice, and what I like, he has workout equipment.
He does, yeah, so we'll talk about that.
I'm just a city girl.
You are, well, you just are a workout fiend. You're a gym rat. Let's just admit
it. Yeah, I would say a city girl, gym rat. I like my gyms.
Yep, and we'll talk about that, and we'll have lots of fun. And this is an area we haven't really reported on a lot, and it's wait till people see how incredibly beautiful the Bruce Peninsula of Ontario is, and this area called Tobermory. So we'll have a lot of road trekkers who are gathering up there. We'll be there all next week and have lots to talk about that. But first, we thought we would talk about, since we are going to be crossing into Canada, what you can expect. I think it's on a lot of people's bucket list to go to various places in Canada, particularly the Canadian Rockies, Ontario. Many like to go over, our road trek listeners like to go to Kitchener, a tour of the mothership, the factory there for road trek motorhomes. But a lot of people like Canada.
And Toronto. Toronto's not that far away. Lots of beautiful things to see in Canada.
Yep. A lot of people come into Canada as they visit the best side of Niagara Falls, which is the Canadian side. And so they will be doing that. So what do you expect? And we thought we would talk about that. If it's if you're going soon or plan to go, here's a couple of things. It can be intimidating. People think, well, I want to go to a foreign country. And let me tell you, there's a great deal of similarities between the U.S. and Canada. You will feel culturally very, very much at home. You'll feel very welcome in Canada. But you need to know that they are two separate countries. They have different rules and different regulations. And there's only one thing I cannot stress enough. If you're going into Canada, do not under any circumstances bring a firearm. Canada has much different gun laws than they do in the U.S. And while it's okay for hunters and very special group, you have to go through some procedures for that. I'm talking about the average RVer going on a vacation. Do not bring in a gun. And that includes those of you who are traveling through Canada going to Alaska. Alaska, many people walk around with a gun when they're out in the bush. Well, don't carry that gun through Canada. You're going to have some issues. You can find other ways to get it there. But that's the first thing. I'm not going to go into any more detail on that, except that's probably the very first question you'll be asked when you cross into Canada. No matter what port of entry you try, you're going to be asked, do you have any firearms? And you better say no. You better not have any.
Well, you know, I can see a problem here, because if you did have a gun, you can't exactly put it in the mail and ship it back to your house.
Well, some people actually ship them by FedEx to a gun store. You can do things like that. There's a whole lot of resources on the website, and I'm not going to even go into any detail, but yes, you can do that. Other people who do travel with a firearm when they're in their RV in the U.S., if you're going into Canada, if you're going out the same entry port, you might want to just stop and rent a storage facility for a while and keep it there. Go to a gun store in that town, the U.S. side, and you can keep it there. My main point is, do not bring a firearm into Canada.
And do not lie.
And do not lie. Absolutely right.
Because your eyes will be darting around and you'll get caught and you're going to be in big trouble.
Well, you know, these agents, both on the Canadian side and the U.S. side, are really well trained. They are trained to look for what they call micro tells. And that is when you lie, there is just a slight change in your expression, normally around your eyes, and they can tell. Trust me, they're better than a lie detector. So don't lie.
I found that last time I was coming in, because I was driving by myself and had Beau in the back seat, and that person coming back to the States, he was staring right into my eyes. I've not experienced that before, because normally you're driving. And, you know, we made small talk and everything, but never stopped staring directly into my eyes.
Yep, as he asked you the questions. Well, let's talk about that for a second. First of all, as you approach the entry port into Canada, you will see signs no matter where you go. Some will say cars only. Some will say trucks. Some will say cars and RVs. So you would take the RV sign. And there'll be other signs that say Nexus. And these are special fast pass unless you have one of those fast passes, and it takes time to get them. That's not going to apply to you. So look for the appropriate lane to get into. And they're really touchy on both sides. There's a little line. It says, do not go past this till the other vehicle is clear. Well, don't.
So the type A's have to cool it.
Type A's have to cool it. Now, I have to say, since we started doing this, I probably travel into Canada almost monthly now, visiting often the Road Trek place where a lot of news is made. I have never had a problem in Canada. Never had a problem, never been delayed, always treated very professionally, very respectfully. They're really great people. They will ask you initially three questions. They will ask you three questions. The first one is, where do you live? And when you answer that question, tell them the city you live in. Don't just say the U.S. Tell them the city that you live in. So in our case, they say, where do you live? We say Oakland Township, Michigan.
And then how long will you stay? That's the question they always ask.
They ask you, how long will you stay? Well, you know, you may not know exactly. Say a week, maybe a few days. We're going camping. And then they'll say, where are you going?
And you better know where you're going, I would think. If you say you're going camping, you tell them, be prepared to say where you're going.
Yeah, don't just say, it's somewhere, we're just going to look out. You have a rough idea. And if you say, I don't know, we're just going to find a place, that's they're going to want to ask more questions. So based on your answer, after you answer the fire alarms question, based on your answers to that, then they'll make their decision of whether they need to talk to you more or have a detailed inspection. You do need a passport to get in. It used to be a driver's license. That's changed. There's a thing called an enhanced driver's license that will work. You can get these fast entrance cards, but trust me, what you really want is a passport. So have a passport that's not expired with a picture of you, and have that ready. You hand that to them as soon as you pull into the inspection, both coming and going. That's important to have that passport. Now, the other thing that you need to know when you go in is don't wear your sunglasses. Remember I told you about the eyes? Well, take your sunglasses off because you are going to want to look into the eyes of the agent. He's going to be looking into yours. If you're looking down and around the side, you just look shifty. So make sure you do not wear sunglasses.
I tell you, I was a little nervous because I had Bo in the back seat. And because he wasn't properly in the seatbelt, they asked me to roll down the window. And I said to the agent, I hope he's a puppy. I hope he doesn't jump out.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what Bo might be capable of doing.
Yep. You can expect that they will ask you how many people are in your vehicle and whether you have pets and all that stuff. We'll get to what you got to do with that. But based on your answers to those questions, they may ask you some more. They may, and I have found this a couple of times, they may say, what's your license plate number? Now, when you pull across, I want you to notice that there is a camera that you'll pass, and that camera is trained to get your license plate number, and these guys see it. And so, you know, if you always should know your license plate number anyway. I need it whenever I stop at a campground. But if you don't know it, you know, just say, I don't know it. I think it's this. But they check to make sure where the vehicle is registered, and they communicate with the U.S. side, both the U.S. and Canada. They're always exchanging information. So, try and know it. You know, something else we should talk about is cell phones.
Turn off your cell phone.
Yeah.
It's just rude to have your cell phone on to begin with, but don't have your cell phone on or a radio. Turn off the radio.
Yeah, you know. Or
just good manners.
That's the truth. Good manners. I think there are signs up now that say cell phone use is prohibited. Do not take out your cell phone and start taking photographs of the border inspection station.
I suppose some people might do that.
Don't look at me. I thought about it once. I also have a dash cam. I turn mine off when I approach. Now, no one has ever asked me about it, but just common sense says this is a secure area for this for whatever nation you're going in. And, you know, you don't want bad guys to have photographs that show that. It's always pretty much the same. But you know, just think about it and don't do stupid things like take pictures. So turn off your cell phone and turn down your radio. That's really good.
But, you know, this seems so obvious, but I think more and more the younger generation, common sense doesn't seem to be there. Just respect for authority, for position, that you are a guest in someone else's home, your best manners.
Yep. Be courteous. You don't want to start offering political commentary or sarcastic comments about anything that's going to extend your conversation, perhaps, with port officials, you know. So just don't be sarcastic. And I think those of you who travel with kids, explain to your kids that this is serious. No joking around or laughing or being stupid. You know, these guys, their task is protecting their country. They don't know who you are, even though you're in an RV. They need to thoroughly check you out. And depending on the way you respond is what they're going to do. So we're answering some really basic things. But I think just be polite. Your advice, being courteous, is the best, I think.
I must be getting old because I'm seeing a real lack of manners.
Yep. Now, I will say the question that most people ask, well, what can we bring in? And that is pretty clear, although it changes. I will have on our show notes area some links to what you can and cannot bring in to the country. For example, everybody's going to be bringing in food if you're camping. In general, going into Canada, you're not going to be able to bring anything. If you have meat, make sure it's in its original packaging. So they can, if they do look, they can say, oh yeah, it's chicken and you bought it at Kroger or Publix or wherever. If you have, you know, they don't like seeing loose stuff. Fruits and vegetables can be tricky. It's easier to bring your regular home fruits and vegetables into Canada than it is to bring them back into the U.S. But you can go to that website that I'm going to put a link to. It's the Canadian website and also the U.S. website for border crossings, and they'll tell you what you can bring. But in general, most of your food that you're going to take camping, it's fine. Pets. Everybody asks about pets and whether you can bring pets.
Yeah, so make sure you have with you, which I think we all have anyway, a sheet with all your pets' rabies shots and all the different shots they've had when they expire. You have to prove that your pet is healthy. Your pet has to look healthy. They don't want a sick animal. They don't want some dog that's coughing or looking mangy coming in, spreading diseases.
Yep.
So have a healthy pet. Have proof that your pet is healthy from your veterinarian.
And for a dog or a cat 12 weeks old or older, you have to have that health certificate from your vet. So if you don't have that and you're bringing your pet in, go get one. Now, can you expect to have somebody enter your RV? That's a question I've got. Now, going into Canada, and I can't count how many times I've crossed, that's never happened. They've never pulled me over for more inspections. They've listened to where I'm going, how long I'm going to be there. We talk. They ask what I'm bringing in, and I say, you know, just overnight stuff or whatever I have. Always tell the truth, but they quickly can understand where you are and going. But they can. They can indeed. So if they say, would you open the door and we want to take a look in, don't give them any grief. Just do so and let them do it. We have, on the other end, going back into the U.S., I would say at least every other time somebody has pulled me over and goes through a more detailed inspection coming into the U.S. from Canada. This is me. I probably just look suspicious.
When you have me with you, it seems like the two of us get through without any problem.
And I think that, you know, that's they're keyed in onto that. There's a guy. They also... it's kind of funny because, you know, I do a lot of television and I'm fairly well known. The area I cross all the time, a couple of times I've crossed and they know me. Hey, Mike, how are you? You know, they know me from television and they've seen me and heard me on the radio and all the stuff where I'm kind of like a local celebrity, but they still pull my car over. And I finally asked the guy, I said, well, you guys know who I am. Why are you doing this? He's, we've got a little signal that every such and such car or vehicle has to get pulled over and go inspecting. So, you know, don't argue with it. I'm glad they're doing that.
Yeah, I just sitting here laughing to myself, thinking the old days when you did investigative reporting, they probably didn't want you to pull one over their
say, head, yeah, look saying, how yeah, they let me through.
They let me through with this, that, and the other thing because they didn't check.
It could be, but they do check.
That's what you used to do.
Yep. So if you do get asked to pull over, and this has only happened to me on crossing back into the U.S., here's what you could expect. They'll set you, you'll just drive forward, you'll park in a designated area. Someone will come out and they'll say, leave your car in there and I think they want you to leave your cell phone in there. And then you just walk into this little inspection area with your passport and they will then ask you probably a couple more questions. They probably will ask you exactly what they ask you at the gate. And someone will go through and look at your vehicle. And they will just open up the doors and look in. They might open the cabinets. They might open the refrigerator. The U.S. side is very strict on fruit, bringing fruit and veggies in. And that that changes all the time. At the port I come in, which is the port here on Michigan crossing, they say, no, you know, you must declare them all. Not that they won't let you have them, but they want to know. So if they say, what kind of food and fruit, you say, oh, I got a couple apples and some fruits. Where did you get them? In our case, we usually bring them from back home in Michigan, but let them know. They may have to keep them, but don't freak out if they do, because they're trying to prevent disease and that stuff.
And something else, just because you didn't have any problem getting your pet into Canada doesn't mean that, you know, they might question you bringing your pet back.
So make sure you have all that stuff.
Don't lose those papers.
Don't lose
those. Otherwise, they might send your pet to a veterinarian or keep your pet or who knows what they do.
Yep. And in terms of pets, by the way, your collar tags that you get from like the county or the city that says they've been rabies, those are not sufficient proof that they've been immunized. You need to have a certificate or a receipt or however you do it from your vet that shows that they've been vaccinated. So make sure you have that. Bringing food across the border, it's generally, yeah, it's not a problem as long as it's in its original packages. Don't carry it in plastic containers. Pet food, as long as it's in the original bag, not a problem.
And don't forget about medication. Don't take your pills and put loose. Them, I guess, loose. Or I guess that would work for those little 7 days, Monday through...
Yeah, a lot of people do that.
Sunday, whatever. Keep your medication in the proper bottle with your name on it.
Yes. And I've never had anybody ask for them, but they certainly could, and they could be very suspicious. So make sure of that.
You just don't want any complications.
Yep. And so generally, you know, your condiments, your ketchup, all that stuff, no problem. Olive oil, bread, you know, candy, chocolate. One question you will get asked coming back into the U.S. is, how much alcohol do you have? And a lot of people like to stop up at those duty-free stops and they buy, you know, you can get alcohol cheaper. There is some sort of a limit, so don't bring like 20 gallons of it across. But, you know, just tell them what you got and you have a receipt. And if you've done something that they won't let in, the worst case scenario is they keep it there and you get to go on your way. But they have searched us a couple times where they've actually run us through kind of an X-ray machine. One time it was a portable one that drove around our vehicle. We're out of the vehicle at that point. They have you wait in a different area. And another one, they had you you kind of go through this, it's like a giant X-ray machine, like a person goes through at the airport, only this one fits around your car. That's happened on the U.S. side a couple of times, but that's about it. So
and there's things that you don't even think of, like hard cheese versus cheese that's liquidy.
Coming back to the brie cheese, for example.
Because of foot and mouth disease, you don't think of that.
Yeah, and they know, you know, there's all that stuff sort of changes, like brie and camembert, that kind of stuff. It's generally okay, but you want to
cheese that contains meat.
Yeah, that's another thing. So, you know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take some food, chicken and probably some veggies as we go in, but we'll try and buy as much fresh stuff in Canada as we can.
So that means we got to go shopping, Mr. Mike, who doesn't like to shop.
Well, it's always fun with you.
Oh, jeez. You can fool them, but not me.
Stock up on my Doritos, Canadian Doritos. And for those of you who drink beer, Canadian beer, yes, indeed, is a little stronger than U.S. beer. And they have some really nice beer. Moosehead, I like that. That's a good beer. Anyway, I digress. Money. One other question they ask about the exchange rate is very favorable of U.S. into Canadian dollars right now. I do everything by credit card as best I can, and then I don't have to worry about keeping track of the exchange rates. But it's always good to have some change. And as soon as you get in the border, at any border you go across, there'll be a little booth there where they have exchange. If it's off hours, if there's nobody working, they have machines that'll change your 5s, 10s, 20s, 50s, whatever. You get a receipt, by the way, back with that. It shows you what it is. Keep that for a record. And then just before you come back into the U.S., if you've still got a lot of that Canadian money and change, then you can also change it back into U.S. money. So how much do you think they need for a week? You know, $100. You know, I don't know if you want to pay cash for everything more, but $100 should be more than enough for most of your incidentals and stuff. And
the rest depends of the stuff on where they're going. If they're going back in the boonies or if they're going to stay in, you know, more populated areas where credit cards are accepted more commonly.
Yep. So just kind of think that through. Where would I have to normally pay cash? And if you want to pay cash, you want to pay it in Canadian money. So there you go. So hopefully that kind of helps. It's very simple to go, and we can't wait to go. It's a little tighter coming back into the U.S. You want to time it. You know, it's always tough to come back on a Sunday because traffic is lined up at the beach into the U.S. and going into Canada on a Friday. It's always
health
busy.
Health insurance. Tell me about health insurance.
Call your health insurance. It always will work, you know, particularly for most people who are on Medicare. It's fine. You can use it. But, you know, if you have real issues that you think you might have to go, you might want to just give a quick call to your health provider. Same with your car insurance. It's covered in Canada. Almost all policies are, but call your agent if you're not sure.
Make sure about health insurance. Because remember, you're doing a story about somebody in the Caribbean and
some countries
she had a crisis and she couldn't leave until she paid her hospital bill and they were raising funds at some hospital.
Yeah,
So make sure you have health insurance.
Yep. So that's a call you need to make with your health insurance provider and you'll be all set. We'll put links to the Canadian and the U.S. border information and what you can, and you can read that. But plan ahead. If you don't have a passport, you think about going to Canada next year, get one. Everybody should have a passport. And if you have one, do a quick check and make sure it hasn't expired. There you go. So we're off to Canada. We'll let you know how it works next week. But it's they're really nice, and it's not a problem going in. Hey, this part of the podcast is brought to you by radpowerbikes.com. This is a great, relatively new sponsor to the podcast. They make electric bikes, and they make really quality electric bikes. And the thing that they make about them that is so cool is their whole model of marketing these bikes is, well, through podcasts like this and direct to consumer. In other words, there's no middleman. You won't see a large retail markup that would be present if you were buying from a third party or a dealer. So you can be sure you're always getting a performance e-bike at a fraction of the cost. And these are wonderful bikes. Three different e-bike models from Rad Power Bikes, all of them offering a wide variety of the things that you want. They all can reach up to 20 miles an hour with zero pedaling. But if you want to pedal, they have all different assist levels that you can use with the throttle, five different levels of pedal assist. So you get an added boost where you want it, when you want it. You can have it a combination of pedal assist and pedaling. This is perfect for people who want to get back into riding or are recovering from surgery. How far can you go on a single charge? A long way, between 20 and 40 miles, depending on how much weight you're carrying on that e-bike. So check them out, radpowerbikes.com. They're priced often less than half the price of comparable bikes on the market because there's no dealer markup, no retail markups. It's that easy. And when you do buy from radpowerbikes.com, tell them you bought it from Road Trekking, and they will give you an additional $75 off your purchase price.
Is it a gadget, a recipe, a tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
Most RVers are not full-timers, and thus, when you hit the road, you have a sticks and bricks home to worry about. Mike and I travel about half the year, often for weeks at a time. So we've learned by experience how to make sure everything will be just fine at home when we return. So here's a list of the things we do. First, we have a home alarm system. The one we use is SimpliSafe. It's a do-it-yourself system. You buy the various sensors, attach them to the walls, and it's done. There are no holes to drill, and the system is all wireless. It is extremely reliable, and for the $14.95 a month, we have 24/7 monitoring with it. Mike installed the system himself, and we couldn't be happier. We have an app that lets us control the whole system from wherever we are. But whatever system you choose, we do recommend you have an alarm system and monitoring. Okay, so what do we do before leaving? Stop the mail delivery. You can do it online or stop by the post office and get a supply of their yellow hold mail cards. They need 3 days notice, but we fill ours out for the date that we're going to go away, and then we have them deliver it when we come back. You can pick the date you want it back. So it's so simple. Tell your neighbors or a friend that you're going to be gone. We have friends who periodically stop by to check the house. The friends water my plants, make sure everything is okay inside, and does a check of the property. We deactivate the alarm by our apps for them to visit our house, go in and out, and it's not a problem. We have our yard professionally tended to. We have a service that comes every week that cuts the grass, and in the winter, we have a snow removal company. So our house doesn't stick out as being empty, and the yard isn't a mess, showing that people have been gone for a long time. There are lots of other things you can do. Some experts recommend unplugging television sets, major appliances, turning off water, and that sort of stuff. We have an automatic whole house generator, so we don't worry about power interruptions, but in the cold climates, you may want to make sure that the furnace is always working. So if travel is going to take you away for the lot in the winter, that the house is tended to. The idea of an automatic generator may be worth the investment. We'll put links on the show notes for this episode, a bunch of other suggestions at roadtrekking.com/103. And if you have any tips for me, please use the voicemail link at the right side of the roadtrekking.com website. I love hearing from you.
Jennifer's tip of the week is brought to you by Good Sam, the world's most popular RV organization, now celebrating its 50th year. Here's an address for you to go to, goodsam.com/roadtrekking. That's goodsam.com/roadtrekking. They've got a great offer for first-time members. Here's the deal. First-time membership costs you just $27. That is a really great rate for 12 months of membership in the Good Sam Club. But the reason it's so great is if you use that goodsam.com/roadtrekking link, you will get, when you join for $27, a $25 certificate off your first night of camping at one of the more than 2,100 Good Sam parks and RV campgrounds. So your membership in effect is only costing you $2, but you're going to even make more than that back, because every other time that you stay at one of those Good Sam RV park or campgrounds, you get another 10% off the nightly rate. And when you buy gas at Pilot or Flying J, use your Good Sam Club card and you will save on fuel. You can also save at Camping World, the club's official RV accessory retailer. You want to join the Good Sam Club? They offer RV services you can count on, lots of valuable information, and great ways to save money. The address again is goodsam.com/roadtrekking.
Questions? You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
Hi, we wonder if there is any online information or if you have done an episode on locations of dump stations in North America.
Well, I've never done a full story on it, but one of our sponsors, allstays.com, which is an app that we recommend for RVers, that's the best source to find. I guess I could count this as their commercial, because the way it works, it's great. You put in the app. Once you have the app, you decide what kind of things you want to know. Do you want to know where there's a campground? Do you want to know where there's a rest area? Do you want to know where the nearest dump sites are to you? And then the site will, when you call up that app, it will look at your current position, because the cell phone has a little device that tells it where it is. And then it will show you on a map, hey, here's where the dump sites are. Just click on that and it will give you the directions and the information on where you can find it. This is updated like all the time. So that's why we recommend that AllStays app for RVers. So that's my best source for you to find dump sites. Now, there are other sites out there that have them. You can just do a Google search for finding RV dump sites. But in general, you're not going to find anything as comprehensive as you will from AllStays.com. That's A-L-L-S-T-A-Y-S. One of the things that we've noticed as we've traveled is more and more along the interstate rest areas, we're finding dump sites available. Not every one, but it's very nice to find that as you travel and you find that there's a dump station there that RVers can use. There's a couple of them in Arkansas. We've seen them in Alabama. We've seen them in Iowa. We've seen them out west. So you can check that. Think about that. You can always look at the website for the state and see if they have them. And many of the Pilot Flying J's or the Travel America big truck stops, they also have dump sites available that you can use. But the best site that I have found is allstays.com, and you can have it search for dump sites, and it will show you where the best place to do that is and the best place that's near you.
I have a 2003 Roadtrek with the fantastic vent. The hinge to the outer lid is broken. Can I buy the outer lid and a new hinge for the unit? The inside unit works fine.
Well, you have probably are dealing with one of the nicest companies that you could possibly deal with, the folks at Fantastic Vent. We've met them at many of the RV shows that Jennifer and I do appearances at around the country. They are so responsive to customer support that I want to just send you to their website. It's fantasticvent.com, fantasticvent.com. I'll put a link to our show notes for this at roadtrekking.com/103. or just call them, and I'll put their phone number on as well. But if you have time to write it down now, their phone number, they encourage you to call. Can you believe that? A company today that takes customer service so great, they say, call us, we'll help you. It's 800-521-0298. 800-521-0298. I'll put a link on our show notes page. You can get that number. They welcome calls. We have found in the past that no matter what's wrong with it, if there's something wrong, and not that we have much, but other people that we know, they send out new stuff, free stuff. Hey, fix this. I've never heard of a time limit on it. There may be because you've got a really old one, but nevertheless, these guys are great, and they will be able to help you out, I am sure. Fantasticvent.com. They're a terrific operation. And again, we'll put links on show notes for this episode to their contact info, roadtrekking.com/103.
Hey, Mike, my name is Pamela, and I inherited a Road Trek 190 Poplar. It's a 2000. It's on the Ram, Dodge Ram chassis. It's a 3500. I really don't know anything about a Road Trek other than what I am reading online, which is not real helpful to me. I need to learn how to operate what's inside it. I need to know it has over 200,000 miles on it. Does it really need another transmission like the transmission people told me? Or since it's running okay, is it going to run okay? I just need some information how to run and operate this thing. And if anybody has anything that would help me, I'd be really interested. It's not in bad shape. It needs some new carpeting in it. It needs another seat in it. But other than that, it really hasn't had much wear and tear on it. So if anybody could help me, I would really like some help. Alrighty, thank you so much.
Well, congratulations, Pamela. You have a 16-year-old vehicle with a lot of miles, but these things get a lot of miles. And at 200,000 miles, it's not. That's a Chevy chassis, I think, that you have. And it's not unreasonable that you would need a new transmission at 200,000 miles. So you might want to have that checked out. Where do you have it checked out? Well, you know what I would do is I would send you to a group called RVinspection.com. RVinspection.com. This is a group of professional RV inspectors. Just as there are home inspectors, these are RV inspectors. And so they will come in and take a look at this and go through it all and say, this is great. You don't have to do anything here. Fix this. This is how you do it. And as they do that, they'll be explaining everything to you. Yeah, you'll pay them a fee, but it's not going to be a tremendous amount of money. And it will help you understand exactly the condition, the RV condition, your new unit is. So congratulations on your inheritance for that. And as you get more involved with that, I encourage you to become a part of our Facebook Road Trekking group. And just go to Facebook and search for Road Trekking the Group, and you can join our group. We've got lots of people there who will help you out. I don't know what city you're in, Pamela, but I am sure that on our Facebook group, there are people near you who would be glad to come by and take a look at you, give them a cup of coffee or a soft drink or refreshments, and they'll look at it and give you some ideas if you have questions. And the nice thing about buying from Road Trek Motorhomes is the roadtrek.com website has links to all of the manuals for each year they have a vehicle, that they've been producing a vehicle. So you can find a manual, if you didn't get it when you bought that, for your 2000 model 190. So those are three ways to help. And I think I would start off with that RVinspection.com website and find somebody near you who can come and take a look at it and say, well, this is what you need to do, and this is what looks like it works great. And in the process of them doing that, they'll teach you how it works.
Hi, Mike. This is Bill Winter from Findlay, Ohio. And I've been listening to your podcast for quite a while now. We have a Winnebago Rialta, not a Road Trek, but we are planning a trip to go down to Florida February of next year. And we wonder how you take care of carrying water in your fresh water tank in the wintertime. Is there a problem with it freezing? Like to hear how you handle that. Again, enjoy your podcast and look forward to many more. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, Bill. Well, good luck on your planning for Florida next year. That's great. So you'll be leaving a cold climate state or province, and it will be very cold, and you do not want, I'm assuming you've obviously kept your RV winterized because you're in a cold climate state. So your RV is winterized. That means there's nothing in the tanks. You've got antifreeze through the system. But you're going to go down to Florida and you're going to want to be able to enjoy it and have some fresh water. So the first thing you do is you buy a couple of gallon jugs of fresh water and you carry your own. Now, you only have to do that until you get down into a warm climate. And then I would dewinterize. Pull into an RV dealership or do it yourself. It's pretty simple. And get the antifreeze out. And then since you're in warm weather, then you can put in fresh water in the tanks and use them for your vacation as long as you're down there. Now, when you come back north, trust me, you do want to re-winterize. And we've done this many times ourselves. One year I didn't. I was going to wait until I got home to do it. And it was a bad move because everything froze up coming home. So I learned the hard way. I re-winterized someplace down in southern Kentucky as I was coming back from Florida in the wintertime. But as you travel there, you want to have water. And the best way what most people do is they get those big gallon jugs of fresh water that you get at a supermarket. They put a bungee cord around it, put it on the countertop near the sink, and then they use that for all of their fresh water as they're driving along. And you didn't ask, but how do you, can you use the bathroom? Can you use the toilet as you're traveling in the wintertime? You don't have any water to flush it with, right? You can't. Just use equal parts to whatever you put in, put an equal amount of antifreeze in and flush the toilet with antifreeze. And again, when you get to a warm area, you'll be all set. All right, we had lots more questions, but that's all I'm going to be able to take on this episode. We love hearing your questions. All you have to do is follow the link on the roadtrekking.com blog. It's at the right-hand side of roadtrekking.com. It says leave voice message. Send us your questions and your comments. We love to feature them right here on the podcast. And sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, bringing you the largest inventory of Class Bs from three locations. These three companies specialize in Class B camper van type RVs, and they have them from all of the major manufacturers. They stock, in stock right now, new and used Road Treks. They have Pleasure Ways. They have leisure travel vans. They have Chinooks and other Class B and B plus and small motorhomes. So visit these three places, VanCityRV.com, CrestonRV.com, and WagonTrailRV.com. Here is Dan from Van City RV with some of their specials this week.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we got a great special this week on a 2013 Road Trek 210 Popular. We also have a 2015 Winnebago Era with a slide, one of the few Class Bs with a slide and a dry bath. You can check those out at VanCityRV.com. Also, we'll let everybody know that we're having our St. Louis RV Fall Show at the Chesterfield Outlet Mall. You can find out about that at STLRV.com. We'll be displaying our brand new 2017 Road Treks, Chinooks, and Pleasureways. You can check them out at the show. Give us a call at 1-800-467-3905 or check us out at VanCityRV.com.
Time now for RV basic training. Tips, tricks, and how-to info to make you a happy camper.
All right, this is a great newbie basic training tip for those of you setting out and you wonder, how do you level your RV? Let's face it, in many campgrounds, and particularly as more and more of us are out there boondocking, spots are not exactly level as we'd like, as pancake flat as we would hope it to be. Well, the big Class A's seldom have that problem because they're usually in big campgrounds that have, blacktop or asphalt pads or cement pads. But even if they're in an area that the spots aren't exactly level, most Class A's, like a parking lot at Walmart, for example, most of them all have automatic levelers and stabilizers. So you put down a piece of board or something so you don't wreck up the asphalt and you can level it and keep it that way. So this is really directed more towards those who have towables and small motorhomes. And the first thing you have to have is a level. Now, this doesn't have to be one of those big cumbersome levels, but I use the one that I picked up as an app on my smartphone. whatever smartphone you have, just search in your app store for Levels, and you'll find plenty of them. The one I have is one of that I like best is this little circle or bullseye level. And you just put the smartphone on the floor or wherever you want to make sure it's level and make sure you line it up in the bullseye, and it's great. You can also buy those little standalone levels like that at just about any hardware store. They cost like a couple of bucks. So you want to have a level. And then the cheapest way to get your RV level, I've seen a lot of people who just, they don't want to spend any money, so they bring a stack of like 2x10 boards cut maybe 2 feet long. And then they'll put those under as many tires as it takes to get that bubble on the level centered right. I'm not a big fan of bringing your own wood and your cheap little, you know, saving money that way. Come on. That wood, it takes up a lot of storage room. And then you got to wonder, will the stack hold as you try and run it up on with your tires? I think it's just inconvenient that way. So, you know, for less than $30, you can buy yourself a set of RV leveling blocks. The ones I use and have used for all 5 years since we've been doing this now is Lynx Levelers, L-Y-N-X Levelers. I will put a link to where they're available on Amazon on my website, but you'll find them. I think Walmart sells them and Camping World and many, many RV stores as well. But if you want to just go to Amazon, they're less than $30. Lynx Levelers. These are interlocking plastic blocks, and they're designed to handle the weight of the largest motorhome around. So all you do is you snap them together, and they form a ramp that will stay stable when you drive or you pull your RV up onto them. And then when you're ready to leave, they unsnap, and they can easily be stored in a little carrying case that fits well in the back of your RV. They're configured to fit pretty much any leveling function. They withstand tremendous weight. You just set them up. The best way I've found is like a little pyramid shape to get the desired height, you know, the small one at the back, and then you drive up and you get the RV up to the level that you want and drive up on the stack and then drive down off of it. They can be used as a support base if you have stabilizing equipment, and then you simply do that. You know, you always want to pick the most level spot you can find, but if you have those little Lynx levelers, it's so easy. And you use that little tiny bubble bullseye type leveler, and you're good to go. This part of the podcast brought to you by Campers Inn. They are the nation's largest family operated RV dealership with 15 locations on the East Coast. I love Campers Inn. These guys have every kind of RV that you'd want. They've got towables, they've got Class Bs, Class Cs, they've got big Class As, pop-ups. They have had award-winning RV sales and service year after year. And the thing I like about them is they're family-owned and they treat their customers like family. They were started back in 1966 by Art and Fran Hirsch with their sons in Acton, Massachusetts. They literally invested their family's life savings into four folding tent trailers, and then they sold them out of their front yard. They wanted to build a hometown RV dealership where every customer felt like family and becomes a customer for life. And now, 50 years and three generations later, they've turned into the largest family-owned RV dealership in the country, Campers Inn RV. They have 15 locations along the East Coast. You cannot find any RV that they don't have or they can't get you. These guys have the expertise. Just search near you, campersinn.com.
Mike's got news.
RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle.
Here's the road trekking news of the week.
Okay, you got several stories for you this week. First one, San Jose, California. And I just bring this up. I'm a big fan of our first responders and a big supporter of our police departments around the country. I believe that they need to make a little bit more money. And so here's a story that sort of illustrates that. And it's got a great RV tie-in because a local TV station went by the San Jose Police Department and was amazed to see the other day at least a dozen RVs in the parking lot of the San Jose Police Department headquarters. What is this? The reporter wondered. And what he found out was this is where many police officers were living. San Jose, like many places around the country, have had a lot of cutbacks. They've instituted mandatory overtime, which forces some police officers to work up to 17-hour days. Combine that with horrendous traffic in the area around San Jose, and some of these officers had to commute great distances where they could find affordable homes. The problem was they had no time. They couldn't even sleep. By the time they got home, they had to come right back again. So what they did is they bought RVs, and at least 17 of these officers are staying in RVs in the police parking lot during the week. And then when they get a day off or a weekend or whatever their schedule is, they can drive home then to see their family. And they're legal. This is all legally parked. The mayor saw that story and said, this is embarrassing for any city. City leaders had no idea what was going on, and they're scratching their heads to what to do next. But the bottom line is pay your police officers more, treat them better, get some support. There's a couple ballots, messages on the ballot that would help them out, boosting their pay and helping them hire and retain more cops. But RVs in the police department in San Jose. And I don't know if you caught this. We've covered this a lot last year, the big controversy, efforts to create a national park, another national park up in Maine, the North Woods of Maine. A lot of local opposition there, just not a distrust of the federal government. Well, there's no national park, but President Obama has created what's known as the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. This is an interesting hunk of land. It was owned by the Quimby family up there. Those are the people, by the way, who came up with Burt's Bees. So they made a lot of money on Burt's Bees. And this family donated 87,500 acres of their private land in the beautiful North Woods of Maine. They donated it to the federal government to create a new park. And this is now the largest public park in the U.S. And while they couldn't start it as a national park because of opposition from the community, that's still ongoing, the White House announced a proclamation from President Obama last week where he declared the land a national monument, and he named it the Katahdin Woods and Waters. So it will now be protected and managed by the National Park Service. It's an awe-inspiring place, just mountains, beautiful channels of streams and rapids and falls and quiet water and beautiful mountainous area. It's a great area and nice clear skies. You need to check it. Maine's North Woods is just stunning. So it's in the north central part of Maine. It's the latest national monument. I'll put a link to it and you can go check it out. The Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. You know how big it is? Have you ever been to Acadia National Park, which is Maine's other beautiful park there in Maine? Acadia National Park? Katahdin Woods and Waters is almost twice the size. And it was originally designated a national monument back in 1916 with a land donation from John D. Rockefeller. And then that kind of fell apart. And anyway, now it's the latest national monument, and it is huge. All right, one last story, and this is for all of you who love, as we do, Yellowstone National Park. If you do, I bet your galleries and your photo libraries are filled with photos from Yellowstone. Well, there's some pretty good bragging rights up for the annual Yellowstone Park Foundation Photography Contest. This is a Yellowstone Forever Photo Contest, they call it. And they did one this year, and they had such great response, they're going to do it again. They have two categories that you can enter. Wildlife, some of the wild animals, and landscapes. So there you go. This should all be taken in the park. And I'll put a link up to how you can sign up for the entry. I think they do charge you, if you're a pro or an amateur, they charge you up to $25. You get to enter up to 20 photos per category. So that's not bad. And they have pro categories and amateur categories. And it's a lot of fun. So if you got some great photos, you never know. You could have them be almost famous. Join the Yellowstone Forever Photo Contest this year. I'll put a link under show notes, roadtrekking.com/103. This portion of the podcast brought to you by Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name you need to know when you're choosing a heating system for your RV. The Aldi system is hydronic, and it brings the features and the benefits that, well, you're just not going to find them with any other RV product. This is the same kind of heating that high-end estate type homes have. It's that silent, radiant, hydronic heat that provides a warm, even, natural heated interior. Aldi is great for pets. It's great for humans too. Increased interior space. It combines essentially two systems in one, your hot water heater and your air heater. It is efficient. I mean, the whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC. And because of that, it extends the life of your propane roughly 40% over forced air, because the propane has to keep burning these heavy things and it's pushing that out in forced air. And it's just, it uses a lot more propane. This is silent. You'll never hear that irritating noise from the forced air heating that comes with most propane systems on most RVs. And you can choose multiple options and amenities. The one that we have is floor heat. We love that, especially as the nights get a little cooler this time of year and the mornings are a little chillier. Having that heated, radiant heat floor is so nice to walk on. Aldi, A-L-D-E, when you go to shop for RVs, they're available on many different platforms now. They are the only name that you need to know when you are choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV Tech Tip of the Week.
All right, our buddy Steve Van Dinter has a particularly interesting report for us this week. Verizon's Steve Van Dinter on how, for those of you who have health issues, as you do a lot of traveling in your RV and you have to carry all these records, and you know what it's like. You know, you've got, you know, the older we get, the more we have to be a little bit more concerned about what we're doing and the monitoring our symptoms and all that stuff. Well, that's where apps can come in. And our pal Steve Van Dinter has some to suggest to us this week. Here's Steve.
Hi, Mike. Staying well while on the go can be a bit of a challenge, but that's no reason to make your health and well-being less of a priority. Fortunately, there are gadgets that can help us stay well, and today I've got three such ideas you'll definitely want to keep in mind. First off, high blood pressure. It's often called the silent killer and affects millions of Americans. The best way to control it is with diet and exercise, and also to make sure you're regularly checking those numbers. Thankfully, the folks at Y-Things have made that easy with their portable Bluetooth blood pressure cuff. Slip it on anywhere, at the beach, in the passenger seat of your RV, or at your office, and it'll take an FDA-certified reading of your blood pressure. It then sends the info directly to your phone for tracking. Should you notice a trend or wonder if it's something you should be concerned about, sharing it with your physician is just a few taps away. Again, that's called the Y-Things blood pressure cuff. Next, carrying around a thermometer isn't always something we think about when running out the door, but this gadget, Thermo, makes it easy. The pill container-shaped device slips easily into luggage or a purse and is just as easy to use. To take a reading, you simply hold it within a half an inch of the middle of your forehead and then move it left or right towards your hair. It'll take 4,000 infrared temperature readings and send it, you guessed it, wirelessly to your phone, where it will keep track of your readings and also any symptoms you'd like to lug with it. Now, how great would this be, especially for those with little ones? That one, again, is called Thermo. And finally, fitness trackers are all the rage, but sometimes we don't need all the bells and whistles. With the Y-Things Go, you attach the coin-shaped device to your belt, or wear it as a watch, and it'll keep track of when and how you're moving. Graphically, it displays how many steps you've taken, and all that info is fed wirelessly to your phone. In addition to tracking running and walking, it's waterproof and can also track your swims. Wear it to bed and you'll get a good idea of how you slept as well. Also, the best part, with the Y-Things Go, you get up to 8 months of use on just one battery. All of these great gadgets can be found at your local Verizon store or at verizonwireless.com. To your health, Mike, with this week's traveling technology tip, I'm Steve Van Dinter from Verizon.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. And of course, this part of the podcast every week brought to you by Verizon, which operates America's most reliable wireless network with more than 112 million retail connections nationwide. I mentioned that we're going to Canada this week, and we had a big tip on that earlier in the podcast. And I travel with Verizon, and man, it just works great into Canada. They have an option where you can get all your data for like spending $2 a day. It's all it adds on to your bill, and it works great. You'll hear this podcast because it will be delivered to you by Verizon. I have Verizon. That's the only network I use when I travel in our RV. We have the Verizon Jetpack and have our own little Wi-Fi network that we use. VerizonWireless.com. They are the technology sponsors of the Road Trekking RV podcast.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
All right, one big one coming up very soon. We talked a little bit about it last week, but I want to reiterate it this week, and we'll even remind you again next week. And this is the big America's largest, as a matter of fact, that's how big it is, America's largest RV show in Hershey, Pennsylvania, September 14th to the 18th this year. Now, there's a big super RV show down in Tampa in January. They claim they're bigger, but who knows? I think they're both probably about equal. This one, perhaps the most influential, because it is the first time most of the 2017 model RVs are on display. They have something like 1,300 of them that will be available to look at throughout the sprawling exhibition area at Hershey, Pennsylvania in just a couple of weeks. Jennifer and I will be there. We'll be hanging out at the Road Trek Motor Homes and the Irwin Heimer booths there. So if you are attending, look for us there. We'll also have stuff on our Facebook group and even a couple of live reports. We'll do live Facebook Live from there, some video reports. But this is a great RV show if you're in the market for one or you want to know what's the latest stuff. They have a million gazillion vendors there with all sorts of great appliances. It's one of the, there's only a couple of shows that we really go to every year. And this is the first one at the top of the list. America's largest RV show. I'll put a link up to it under the show notes area for this. America's largest RV show, September 14th through the 18th in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path, a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion you probably won't find in a guidebook. Here's Mike.
Well, our regular RV Off the Beaten Path reporter, Tom Burkett's got a great one for us this week. What I love about Tom and Patty, his wife, Tom and Patty Burkett's reports is they are perfect examples of those RVers who really know how to explore. They drive mostly off the interstates, and they know that in small towns, there are all sorts of special wonders and always some great stories to share. Here's Tom with this week's Off the Beaten Path report.
Hi, Jennifer and Mike. When I was growing up, we made a lot of trips from the eastern U.S. to Colorado. Camping was an adventure, but I can imagine what a job it must have been to set up our old canvas tent and wrangle two meals and a bedtime for one night with four young kids. So we almost always did it straight through, Ohio to Kansas City, where we overnighted with family, then another long day to Denver, where other relatives were waiting. As an adult, I've repeated the same trip many times, often taking my grandmother to a family cabin in the Rockies. The big difference was that she was willing to stop anywhere, anytime. We often drove the smaller state highways north and south of the interstate and passed through the towns that grew up to serve local farms and ranches, and later travelers as they made their way west. A surprising number of these little towns had and have quirky museums that highlight local history. Over the years, we visited the Steamboat Museum, the Post Rock Museum, the Barbed Wire Museum, the Forgotten Fossil Museum, and many others. Some of these are still around to enjoy, and now some of these bypass towns are making an effort to lure us off the big road with something unusual. High marks go to Casey, Illinois. As you ride Interstate 70, you may see a billboard inviting you to visit the world's largest wind chime. With its longest tube, a whopping 42 feet, it sets up a low, lonesome ringing when the wind begins to blow. Looking like a modern sculpture, it towers over the town and dwarfs the tiny park in which it's set. The sunshine shimmers off it, and on a gray day, it looks ready to step off down the road for better weather. If you listen to Prairie Home Companion, or if you grew up here, you know Midwesterners are given to overachievement. No surprise, then, to look across the street and see the world's largest rocking chair. Then to wander down the street and climb up to stand in the world's largest mailbox. Largest knitting needles? Check. Largest golf tee? Check. Pitchfork? Wooden shoes? Check and check. You never know what'll be next in Casey, so stop in. Have a meal at the Windchime Cafe. Shoot an entire roll of film in one small town block. Then leave Casey if you like, but keep your eyes open. Little towns aren't so little in their own eyes. I'll let you discover for yourself which tiny Midwestern museum will hand crank ice cream to order while you look at the exhibits, and which one will allow you to design your own cattle brand and burn it into a wall plaque, and where you can eat homemade kolaches in the shade of a giant Pysanky egg, or where you can wake up the neighborhood by making a 50-foot dragon breathe real fire in the middle of the night. They're all out there. Happy travels.
Thank you so much, Tom Burkett, our off the beaten path reporter. And doesn't that make you just want to get on the road? Doesn't it? I don't know what kolaches are, and I don't know what a Pysanky egg is, but I hope to find that out. So keep traveling, Tom. We appreciate those off-the-beaten-path reports. And if you have one out there, a loyal listener, why don't you phone it in? Just write it up and then use the leave voicemail link on the website. It's on the right-hand side of roadtrekking.com, and you can record your off-the-beaten-path report, and we would love to hear from you as well. Thanks to Tom Burkett for this one and the great folks at Casey, Illinois. This part of the podcast is brought to you by Allstays. I talked about them early in the program, so I don't have to say too much, except that Allstays is the only app you need when you're finding an RV app. They're the number one RV and camping app, have been since 2010, providing traveler information on every possible level of camping and RVs. As we said earlier, from finding dump sites to finding campgrounds, to finding campgrounds that have discounts for RV clubs, to finding campgrounds that have laundry facilities, to camping in the middle of nowhere, boondocking, to finding Walmarts around the country that let you spend the night, or Cracker Barrels that let you sleep in their parking lot. You need that Allstays app. Allstays.com. It's the only single app that you need when you're out there looking for a place to stay.
In a Class B motorhome. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Indeed, we will. We look forward to meeting and hanging out with a whole bunch of other folks who will be joining us in the Bruce Peninsula, Northern Ontario, next week for our annual, we do several of these a year, but this will be probably our first annual Tobermory Adventure in the crystal clear waters of Lake Huron off the Bruce Peninsula in Northern Ontario. Can't wait to meet many of you there for the first time. Remember, if you'd like to have your voice heard, be a part of the podcast, you can record a voicemail message by clicking the right-hand button on the roadtrekking.com website. Please do so. We love having listener voices on the program. Know that this episode, new episodes, released every single Wednesday. So all you have to do is subscribe to have it automatically sent to your smartphone or your computer. Just use the subscribe link on the roadtrekking.com blog, or go to iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcast player you have and make sure you subscribe. Till next time, I'm Mike Wendland, Road Trekking across North America. See you, everybody.